This is Football. I'm Kevin Clark. Draft episode. A lot of those this time of year. Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus joins. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to BS for a little bit. We did a lot of BSing, but then we get to the meat of the episode. The meat of the episode is players that were born to play for a certain team. You know what that means if you think about it, because you always hear this guy, Raven, all over him. This guy, Steeler, all over him. This guy was born to play for Mike McDaniel's offense. This guy, hey, 49er, big physical guy. We know what that looks like on the offensive side of the ball. So that's what we do. Trevor brought three. Really enjoyed this. We talked big picture about the draft as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Trevor Sikkema.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Trevor Sikkema, lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus. Good hair guy, good facial hair guy. I feel like there's a lot of good facial hair going on for the YouTube viewers. If you're getting audio, you're just not getting the full picture, boys. You're just not getting the full picture. Are you still in Florida, Trevor Sikkema, or have you relocated?
No, now I am in the beautiful city of Charlotte, North Carolina, which I will say, too many people are moving to. Stop moving. Oh. We got too many people here. The roads are packed, man.
It's closed.
The traffic's bad.
We've closed it down.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's all closed. Yeah. You actually can't move here anymore. Yeah.
No, it's done. It's done. That's good to know. Do you like Charlotte? I feel like my hot take, and maybe Charlotte is this, maybe it's not. I wish we could take New York City, greatest city in the world, great buildings, great community, and move it to the Mid-Atlantic. Like maybe South Carolina, like where Charleston is. We just take all the buildings, put them on trucks, and we move to South Carolina. And we have seasons, but then more than anything, we have no 29-degree days.
So genuinely, that's what people are doing. Like it's all the people in New York who are tired of either the weather or New York prices who are moving down to Charlotte, or it's people from Florida who are tired of the heat in Florida and they're moving up to Charlotte. So that's why I say like, we got too many people here now, because what you are saying is many, many people are saying this as the joke goes, as the meme goes. Like there are too many people who are moving to Charlotte now. But in all seriousness, I mean, I love it here. It's great. Like you said, like there's actually four seasons. You actually get to experience all of this. Winter's not too long. It's not too cold. Summer's not too long. It's not too hot. You actually get spring and fall. Like it's very nice. It's a very nice place to live. There's tons of great restaurants and things to do and everything in Charlotte. So I can see why people love it. Just, you know, stop. Yeah, it's closed. It's closed for business. You can't come here anymore.
All right. So we're going to do a couple of things here. We're going to do the guys who were born to play for certain teams in this draft, which I'm really going to enjoy. I got your list earlier. I'm really excited about it. We're going to go through these three guys. Curious. April 10th is when we're recording this. Episode will go out April 11th. Clips will go out April 12th. But it's all the same. Most boards are locked in, maybe a couple of changes. Every testing result is pretty much in. Medical rechecks just happened, so I'm sure there'll be some movement. But really, draft season is over, and we just kind of wait now. And I remember, and I'm sure you do too, when the draft was in May, talking to GMs, and they were being like, oh my God, this sucks. Because you're just like changing your mind on guys because they're bored. They're just like, yeah, we love this tight end. But then like we had an extra week to think about it. And we played golf 11 times and we were like, oh, maybe he sucks. Like it was just nobody knew what to do. How do you view this time of year? Is this just you just double checking the prospects, learning the prospects, digging through to more tape? Like Trevor Sikkema views April 10th. How?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad for me or people in similar seats that I'm in, because we still get trickles of information from like what the league is hearing, right? Like up until draft weekend, we are still trying to find as much information we can about what this team's going to do and who they're going to gravitate towards and who they had in for visits and all this kinds of stuff. So for us, it's not so bad. For teams, I can imagine it sucks. Because like you said, the board's basically set in March and they're just sitting here for 2 months just waiting for the draft to come around. So I don't mind it. You know, certainly this year it's my first year as the lead draft analyst for PFF, so we're still cranking out the draft guide and we're coming up with the final versions of that. So I'm still like staying busy, still watching as many players as I can, so I'm still like grinding tape doing all that stuff. But for me, it's not so bad because there are things to learn all the way up until the draft kicks off on that Thursday. Whereas I do understand if you're an NFL team, you're not learning anything new basically between the beginning of March about prospects, that is, like the beginning of March up to the end of April. And even like you said, like it was into May. So I can understand why NFL teams hate it. But for me, it's not so bad. It's still
entertaining. Yeah, it's interesting because I think that there's a peak because draft season is shorter than we think for most right. GMs, most assistant GMs, most of these guys. I mean, scouts are looking at these guys 3 years out. GMs, they'll watch a couple quarterbacks or something if they're quarterback needy the year before, maybe watch a couple college games. But it's a little bit shorter than we think, but it's basically over by now.
I don't think people realize that's happening. So like, you know, like I'll go on shows or podcasts or whatever, and it'll be say February or March or something like that. And either betting markets will move or people's rankings will kind of change a little bit as we get into final rankings. And I'll go on shows and people be like, well, why are they changing? Like, like all the film has already been out. And it's like, okay, but you have to realize we are also in the predictive business. So when we do mock drafts change as we learn what these teams are doing. And like right. you said, like scouts are living, eating, breathing, sleeping, all of this, all of the prospects all the time. But some of the general managers, some of the head coaches, like some of the coaches are new, right? Like some head coaches like came in mid-January. And so like you're trying to figure out your staff and then you get together and then you figure out which players you like. And then it's not until February or March that you understand what this regime might be gravitating towards. So I also just don't think a lot of people realize that that is what's happening. It's not like we're just totally changing our opinions on a whim. Well, I mean, some people do, but when it comes to mock drafts, people are like, oh, this guy's shooting up mock drafts and no games have been played since. What's going on? Well, what's going on is we're learning about what teams think of these guys. And a lot of times they're turning the page in late January, early February. So it takes a little bit of time.
There was an article from Ian Rappaport maybe 2 or 3 years ago in the middle of the season. And it was like, the scouts don't like this next upcoming quarterback class. This is, I think, 2 years ago. Don't like the quarterback class in April. And then there was a quote in there that was like, well, the scouts don't like them, but wait until the coaches fall in love with some guys. And it's like, hey, that's what happens is the coaches and like at the Senior Bowl are like, wait, what? This guy, I love this guy. He's 6'7". He's got a rocket arm. Let's draft him. And then, the second part is like, don't let the coaches in the room. Yeah. Don't let the coaches in the room. Get them out of here. If the reason the quarterbacks are getting overdrafted, put put one of those Airbnb locks out there and be like, unless you have the code, you can't get in, and then you'll be a better drafter. That was always the criticism I've heard of Bill Belichick on the draft side, is the scouts would do all this work, and then he'd be like, well, I don't know, I talked to Greg Schiano. He said this. And they'd be like, what?
Right, okay. Like, what are you paying me for, you know?
All right, we'll take N'Keal Harry, whatever.
And I think there's a lot of stories like that that are just like scouts absolutely grinding to get the best evaluation of this player as they possibly can, just for either the coach or the GM or sometimes even the owner to come in, and they're just like, nah, we like this guy. He's for whatever reason. It's like, all right, well, what am I doing this for?
So I love the Jerry Jones like draft card stories where it's like, well, we had to take the draft card out of his hand. He really wanted to draft Johnny Manziel or Pat. You know, he was obsessed with Paxton Lynch, or like he loved Connor Cook. Remember, that was the whole thing. He liked Connor Cook more than Dak Prescott because Dak Prescott didn't play an approach style offense. And it's like, there's all these, the fact that the Cowboys have the talent they are, it just seems like it's a happy accident. It was really funny when they traded for Trey Lance last August or September. And I was listening to one of the beat writers podcasts, and they're like, well, they just wanted Jerry to get a win. And it's like Jerry's a scout. They're like, it's like, what the hell is going on in Dallas?
Also, wait, what's the win? Trading for a guy who went three overall, wasn't good?
He's really like intrigued by Trey Lance. And they
Interesting.
Wanted to
make sure. Okay.
Listen, man, I don't know. I won't even begin. All this stuff about like, oh, the Cowboys are all in or whatever. It's like, Jerry just says stuff. Jerry just said, we can't do close readings. He's not Stanley Kubrick, where you just like, you can go through it with a fine tooth comb. Oh, when he says this, he really means this. Jerry's just talking. When he was giving those press conferences, he gave like four in a row in the same hallway, in the same chair. And there'd be like 10 people around him. They'd all walk away. And then a new group or half of the same group would come back and he'd just talk again. He just talks. That's all he does. And then somehow it gets into the ecosystem where it's like, well, Jerry Jones said this. Yeah, he said a lot of things all the time.
Doesn't he have like a weekly show on like one of the biggest radio stations in Dallas during the season?
He talks after games before the coach does.
I don't think I realized it was that order.
Brother,
oh man.
That is why
this league is so fascinating. Because like, again, I'm not saying I'm the best talent evaluator in the world. I'm not. Obviously, there's a lot of football things that I'm still learning, and guys who have played the game have a different experience and great expertise and all that kind of stuff. But like watching players and determining like, okay, generally who's good, who's not, that part's not super difficult. There's a lot of nuance of rankings and okay, styles. Once you get into styles and pros and cons of players, okay, there's a big conversation there. But it's so fascinating how there have been so many big misses before in the NFL draft. And it's just because there are so many decision makers in the room. There are many people who want a say in, and I get it, it's multi-billion-dollar organizations, right? And it's like they want a say in what's going to happen, especially when it comes to the more front-facing players, especially quarterbacks. And it's just, that's how you get from, okay, the scouts like this guy. Okay, but the coach also likes this guy. Ah, but the GM's sort of hot and cold. Oh, the owner's going in a completely different direction. And all of a sudden, because maybe one person wanted to go the completely opposite direction, guess what's happening? They're going in the opposite direction. So I don't know, man. All this, I truly hope that we get a million tell-all books when so many different GMs or owners or whatever like retire for good, like over the
or
next...
they can come on the This Is Football podcast and just tell all the stories. Either way,
very true, very true. And like obviously that would be my choice. You know, if I had unbelievable gold nugget stories to tell, that is what I would do. But I'm just hoping over the next 20 years we get a lot of those because I think there's a lot.
Tell you what, Greg McElroy is ushering in the era of just incredible insight that dominates a new cycle here on This Is Football. So we can just come on. Belichick can come on. Everybody can come on. I will say this is the last thing before we get to what we're actually doing here today. Mark Workentine, late great. When I was with the Knicks, he was assistant GM. He was also the Nuggets GM during the Carmelo era. And I was asking about the draft because we were just BSing about college prospects. And we were at a game. Maybe we're Oklahoma City, maybe. And we're sitting courtside. And he was like, here's the thing about the draft. Very simple. There's 16 lottery picks, 14 lottery picks. He said, 8 of them can play. 6 of them can't. Just find the 8. And the 8 are always available in the lottery because the other teams overthink it or they take the 6'8 guy who can't play, but he's long and they really want length. He's like, just take one of those guys. And he's like, if you sit in a draft room, it's the easiest thing in the world because the scouts will tell you who's a head. The scouts will say, this guy actually, his coaches say, has no athleticism. Or this guy has missed, just went AWOL for a month of practice and we have no idea where he went. Those guys get drafted. Those guys get drafted higher than you think. All of those red flag guys, because teams fall in love with a certain trait, or they say, I forget who the pitcher was, but there's a really good pitcher who ended up on. Maybe it was Zach Greinke. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I don't want to put players on the story. But it was that there was a Pirates pitcher who got drafted first overall or overdrafted. It was because the owner read Moneyball. And he was like, we have to draft a college pitcher. And the scouts were like, don't do that. No, don't just be like, don't read Moneyball and be like, we have to draft a college pitcher. But yes, that literally happens more than we think, that where someone's like, hey, we have to get longer. We have to get length on the defensive line. And somebody would be like, well, we're going to overdraft a guy by 30 spots, but okay, you said that. Anyway, let's not get off track here. We're doing guys who were born to be on a team. You have a spicy quarterback one, first overall. Trevor Sekhma, you have the floor.
Okay, wait, not first overall.
I meant first overall in the – Caleb Williams is the first overall pick in the draft. I meant when you sent me your list of guys who were born to be – wouldn't that be funny if I just changed the parameters of this? And I'm like, actually, those three players are the first three players on your mock draft. I'm sorry to say.
You need more of it.
I've submitted to Chris Collinsworth. He's changed your big board to have these three players. All right, your first guy born to be on a team.
Yes, so this is one that that I thought of immediately because it's one that I like. I'd love Bo Nix to work with Sean Payton. I really would. And I don't, and I'm not like, I don't know if it happens at 12. You know, I think the Broncos are in a situation where the more I think about it, the more I think that they're going to trade down. Like, I just don't think they're going to pick at 12. I don't think they have the ammunition to move up. I think they're probably going to end up moving down. But whether it's to the back end of the first round or maybe if they get a second round pick and they kind of wheel and deal that, I don't know. I just love the idea, however it could happen, of Bo Nix getting to work with Sean Payton. Because think of the last couple of years of Drew Brees, I should say. Certainly, like, as the arm talent was going downhill and he was getting a little bit older, like, this was somebody who the Saints offense was still good. Now, was it at its peak? No, but the reason why is because Payton and Brees had such an incredible connection of keeping the offense on rhythm. Who am I throwing the ball to when? What routes are we running? What coverage are we attacking with different formations that we have? Which players are we emphasizing every single week? This was somebody who mastered an offense very, very well, and Brees always took care of the football as best he possibly could because he knew that with less potency in the offense, okay, every turnover gets more and more detrimental. I'm not necessarily saying that, like, Nix is noodle arm Drew Brees, but when I think of the qualities of Nix, of why I think he could be a starting quarterback in the NFL, it is those things. Mastery of Oregon's offense, knowing exactly where to go with the ball, like having pinpoint accuracy, a super low turnover worthy play rate, especially over the last 2 years, really nice play under pressure. And then when a lot of the quick hit on rhythm stuff, underneath stuff was working really well, he was not afraid when the offense called for it to rip it down the field, hit a hole shot, go deep, hit it over the middle in between the linebackers and the safety, because I think he has that type of ball placement and accuracy to be able to do that. So with Payton specifically, he just had so much success with different stage Drew Breeses, and I feel as though even like at the beginning, Nix can come in and really work to master that offense quickly. Because somebody, I was saying this to somebody a little bit ago, I think it was earlier this week, and they were saying, well, Sean Payton's a very demanding coach. Like, he's going to demand a lot of you. And I said to myself, Nix is a football lifer, right? Like, his dad played, he played at Auburn, he went through those hardships, he went to Oregon, he retooled himself. Like, I don't think he's just reciting the words. I think he genuinely wants to put in the work to be great. And because I think that he can mentally handle the demand of getting coached by Sean Payton and just that overall approach to, I don't have to make the biggest throw every single play. What wins in this league is true efficiency. That's where I think Nix is really, really good. That's also where I think he could get even better, because some of the cons I have from him are, like, you know, the footwork's not always married with the arm release, and sometimes he doesn't step in the pocket as well as he needs to. Like, those things can get fixed even more confident that you have, the more reps that you have. And so to me, that's why I thought of players in this draft that were born to go to certain spots. I think Nix and Sean Payton's expertise would work really well.
Okay, so I think this is interesting because there's two – first of all, I really like that, and I have a couple of questions for you. I think there's two things to know about sort of this topic. The first is that there are certain teams that have identities, the Steelers, the Ravens, teams where it's like, we know this guy was born to be a Raven, or I mean, it's something, this guy was born to play with Patrick Mahomes or whatever. Coaching-specific homes are something different altogether, because I think that – remember, Sean Payton was one of these guys who wanted to trade up for Mahomes. That was always the story. Like, I think there was always, remember with Russell Wilson, there was always the stories about, like, guys pounding the table or whatever. But it's like, well, you actually passed on Russell Wilson, so you don't get to say that. For Mahomes, because he went where he did, like, there are teams that really did try to trade up and Andy Reid ended up doing it. But I think that Sean Payton finding a quarterback and molding him from, and he didn't do that with Drew Brees, by the way. Remember, he got Drew Brees mid-career. He got Russell Wilson and end-stage career, frankly. We didn't know it, but end-stage career. And now for him to get a young quarterback and mold him, I think is fascinating because I think he's not going to fail at that. He really isn't. And I've always said when I took the job, I said I'm a lot more comfortable with the idea of him fixing the Broncos than him fixing Russell Wilson because I don't think Russell Wilson was ever going to be a fit there. But I have to ask you, Bo Nix is 24 years old. Is that a concern when you're talking about molding a quarterback? Does he have habits that, I mean, he's played so many, what, I mean, he was class of 2018 in college. Does mm-hmm. he have habits that Sean Payton can fix? Or is that like, it would be easy if he was like a Sam Darnold type and he's 20 years old coming into the NFL and you could just say, okay, well, he's raw. We can do this, this, and this with him. When he's 24 and he'll be 25 the week of next year's Super Bowl, is that a concern about just drafting him to mold him?
See, I don't think so. I'm not really worried about that with Bo Nix. And I also think that this question gets brought up, and I'm not saying that you're asking it like incorrectly or unfairly. I think it's a very common question that gets brought up when it comes to like age of quarterbacks. And like you mentioned, a big reason for that is, okay, well, are they already ingrained in what they're going to do? Can they actually get better? And I don't think that people specifically with Bo Nix think about the context of the fact that he played at Auburn for 3 years as a starter and was not good at Auburn. Like he straight, like he was a starter. No, he was getting starter reps. He was getting like those, you kind of said, like ingrained tendencies and play styles and everything. And it wasn't good. It was not good enough at Auburn. I watched him go to a new situation and get better, change a lot of those tendencies, play so much better under pressure. And so he did that even like 2 years ago. So I believe like we've kind of already seen that with Nix, is that he has the ability to get better and improve in a brand new environment. So I have to believe that just because he's 24 this time and not 22, that he's going to be able to do that again. And, you know, look, the age breakout metric, I think, is something to note. I don't think it's as much of a deal breaker for the quarterback position because there are quarterbacks playing into their late 30s with regularity now. I mean, like, not even counting Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Like, there are guys who mid-late 30s are still around. So if you tell me, okay, Bo Nix is going to be 24 this year, if you tell me I get another 10 years out of Bo Nix anyways, that's worth it. Like, that's worth absolutely wherever you're going to pick him. So to me, I think that the if you draft this guy, people use this phrase all the time. We draft this player and you won't have to worry about that spot for the next decade or whatever. I'm just here to say.
It's always a tackle. It's always a tackle.
Dude, and here's the thing. It just doesn't exist. Like, no. The amount of picks that hit in the NFL draft is small. The amount of picks that hit in the NFL draft where you get two full contracts and nearly a decade out of them is small. Like 1% of 1%, it feels like. So we throw that around way too often. And for Nix, I just look at, okay, I think that he's got starting caliber intelligence for the position, knows how to play it really well. I think his work ethic is obviously good because I watched him be horrible at Auburn and completely retool himself, basically pick himself up, learn a new offense, do something differently. So I'm not worried about his age, especially for the quarterback position, and especially if he gets to go to a spot with a good coach that I have faith in.
I love when they're like, you don't have to worry about this guy for 10 years, he's going to write it in ink, 10-year starter. Oh, by the way, he's going to go 55th. It's like, no, he's not. He's not going to go 55th. All right, your second guy.
Okay, my second team player fit. This one is kind of like a style and kind of like what you said with the Baltimore Ravens. I catch myself doing this all the time. Like a guy will get drafted there and be like, ah, such a Raven. This
born is to a be a Raven. One. Born to be a Raven. Rex Ryan was always big on play like a Jet. And is that a good thing, pal? Okay. Anyway, but it is good thing with the Ravens.
Well, it was a good thing for the Jets when he was there on defense, but you know, everything else, maybe not so much. So this one's a little bit newer. It's the Detroit Lions, and it's obviously since the Dan Campbell, Brad Holmes era. Mike Samristil, the corner / safety, I'll just call him a nickel defender from the University of Michigan, former wide receiver turned into a DB. He is just one of the best football players in this class. Now, I don't think that Detroit's going to draft him because they have Ryan Branch to kind of play that role. But if you're talking about like guys who were born to play for this team, I guess you maybe could say this for the Ravens as well. But when I listen to Dan Campbell, when I listen to Brad Holmes, when I've listened to even the position coaches, yep, the DBs coach, the linebackers coach, they talk about physicality. They talk about toughness. They talk about competitiveness. They talk about tackling. And those are all adjectives that you would describe wholeheartedly to paint the picture of what Mike Sammerstill has been for Michigan over the last 2 years. I mean, this is a guy who is absolutely fearless in any assignment he has. Playing the nickel is such a difficult task for any defensive back because you're either going up against supersized, crazy athlete tight ends, bigger receivers, or the shiftiest, smaller wide receivers that you've ever seen in your life at the NFL level. And I somehow believe that Sammerstill can look at any of these spots and go, all right, cool, I'm locking him down. Let's do it. And I also am not afraid to put him in those positions close to the line of scrimmage because he's physical. He does not shy away from that. Despite being a little bit smaller, he does not shy away from the physical parts of the game. So that as a Dan Campbell identity, I think that this dude was like born to play for a coach like Dan Campbell. I don't know if it happens, but
are you comfortable at 29 there?
I would be with Sammerstill. Like I think he's a top 40 player. I think I have him 36 overall on my board. So like if it was a position in need, like let's say, again, the Lions have Bryant Branch, so I don't think that this happens. But if they did not have Bryant Branch, I would absolutely be cool with them taking Sammerstill at 29. And maybe, yeah, shoot, maybe they still would. I think they like their safeties, but if they think of him more as a safety and they don't feel like they can have too many great football players on their team, maybe they'd even think about it because we've seen them go against the grain before. But
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I was speaking of the physicality. I have a lot of stories about it because I did that big profile at Dan Campbell down 3 years ago. And it was the first day of Penei Sewell practicing in pads. And he came off the field and he goes, Sewell said, pads, hitting. And he goes, this is like water in the desert. Okay. So then, like, and everybody laps it up because it's Lions football. And I see Dan Campbell, and I was like, dude, I just saw Penei Sewell. He said the hitting is like water in the desert. And he just kind of, like, looks down, and he just goes, that is awesome.
It
and
is
I always think about that.
Dude.
He literally went Chris Farley show on me. He just goes, that is awesome. Like, he literally just starts mumbling under his breath. And when he, like triumphantly says awesome, we're in his office. He could not have been more excited that Penei Sewell described hitting as water in the desert.
Dude, because that's when you know, right? Just going back to the conversation that we were just having about, like, it's easy to sometimes, like, it's easy to see players be good on a football field, but, like, the whole process of where do you draft a guy comes down to, honestly, competitiveness and competitive toughness. And those are things that you just don't know until you start cracking the pads in the heat of training camp before the season begins. And so for Penei Sewell to be like, oh yeah, baby, it's here. I'm sure Campbell was just like,
yeah,
thank the Lord, because we got a good one here.
Let's go. Like everybody says he's a meathead. He's not a meathead. He's a really smart football guy. But guess what he does love? Old school football, which does not make you a meathead. We'll be back with Trevor after this. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's New Orleans, Massachusetts. If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Anyway, your third guy, Trevor Sikkema.
Yeah, so this is an offensive tackle who, you know, could play for the next decade, right? Just like pencil him in, lock him in there for the next decade. I got Talize Fuanga, the offensive tackle from Oregon State. Mean cuss, just true finisher, absolute mauler at right tackle. I think he would be incredible with the Philadelphia Eagles, specifically with Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach. Like, this is, I don't know if this happens. You know, I've cooked up a world where, hey, Philly's got two extra second-round picks. They're currently picking 22. They want to put their foot on the gas when it comes to the offensive line. They're going to have to do a little shaking anyways with Jason Kelsey gone. Who knows how much longer Lane Johnson's going to play because of all the pain that he's had to play through over the last couple of years. Maybe they say, hey, we've got two second-round picks. Let's offer Denver, who doesn't have a second-round pick, one of our second-round picks to move up from 22 up to 12, go get ourselves to Talize Fuanga. He can play right guard this upcoming year, so that gives you an incredible starting five right off the bat with him playing right guard. And then whenever Lane Johnson does retire, he gets to kick out at offensive tackle. That mentality, that mindset, the foot quickness, the power that Fuanga has, and somebody like Stoutland being able to harness that and continue to allow Philly's offensive line, which – develop guys like Jordan Mailata, have truly developed guys like Landon Dickerson as well. Obviously, Jason Kelsey has led the way, and Lane Johnson have done that for many, many years. Allowing that to continue to be an identity, that sort of moldable, powerful player on the Eagles' offensive line, I think Fuanga was born to be coached by Jeff Stoutland in Philadelphia.
I love that. Stoutland, and he was at Miami when I was there, actually, but I didn't really know him. Like, one of the most underrated forces in modern football. Like, just you were talking about never having to worry about a position. Don't worry about anything with Jeff Stoutland.
Dude, well, I mean, that's like what it was with New England for many years with Dante Scarnecchia, right? Yeah. It felt like the Patriots could just either draft or sign anyone. And Scarnecchia was like, yeah, all right, I'll make him as good as he can possibly be, whatever that is. And it just felt like the Patriots for years had so many good different offensive linemen who maybe weren't seen as the most talented guys in the world when they were brought in or drafted or whatever. But Scarnecchia, just to your point, is such an underrated element of the Patriots dynasty because they didn't have to worry that much about offensive line because they just knew that he was going to coach the best out of those guys.
100%. And also, by the way, everyone's talking about Brian Callahan. I think it's going to work in Tennessee long term. Yes. Bill Callahan being there, his dad – I actually asked him when he was on the show a couple weeks ago if he interviewed his dad. He said he did not. I think it'd be very funny if there was some like HR mechanism in which he had to sit down with his dad and be like, so tell me your vision for the team, pal.
That's actually incredible. That's like when Lane Kiffin was head coach and Monty was his defensive coordinator. Where was that? Was that at USC? Was that at Tennessee? Wherever that was?
It was both, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Wait, he's
not as DC still.
No, right? No. He's okay, retired. Okay. He's retired. Okay. Maybe he's like an advisor or something. But that happened when Brian Ferentz got hired at Iowa. I believe he was OL coach first or assistant OL coach. And Kirk literally was like, we interviewed like 90 people for this job. And it's like, yeah, I don't think you did, man. I don't, or if you did, that makes it even worse. Anyway, we're going to let you go. You have house stuff today in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. Trevor Sikkema, lead draft analyst for PFF. Plug what you got going on right now. I saw some mock drafts.
So we are finishing up the PFF NFL draft guide, and that will be out in the next week or so. So we'll have over 250 guys in there, all the great information, the scouting reports, the strength and weaknesses, the player connections, the player comps, like all that good stuff. And then, firing off the final couple of predictive mock drafts. And I'm going to try to, because listen, I am in a mock draft competition. So I've got skin on the line. So like every time I get to my final mock draft, I'm not just messing around. I'm telling you who your team is going to draft. So be on the lookout for that one as well.
Love that. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll see you around.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Anytime.